If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gapping with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, we have a long overdue listener mailbag episode for you. I'm recording this from Soho House in West Hollywood, actually Holloway House. This is the morning after the Threads Oscars viewing party that I went to last night, where I hung out with a bunch of other fellow creators, both in and out of the Bravo space, a lot of people who you would recognize, and a lot of friends of mine who I don't get to see often. And we had a really, really good time. A lot of our collective faves were there, too many to name specifically. But if you follow me, you probably saw a bunch of pictures. Sorry for the overload of story posts, but also not sorry. I don't know. It was a back-to-back wedding and work event weekend situation here in LA for me. So I am pretty tired this morning, and I haven't had that much time either to scroll or catch up on my shows this weekend. It's been a very social event heavy weekend, not complaining about it. But I actually haven't even started The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives latest season that dropped on Thursday. I just haven't had the time. But this is actually the perfect time to answer some of your questions that you all have for me. So thanks to everyone who submitted questions. I tried to get to all of them, but it's possible a few fell through the cracks. So apologies if I did not get to yours, but I think I got all of them. I think. Let's just get into it. Lou Loves Reality on Twitter asks Gibson, what is your take on Summer House currently overall? Are there too many newbies, and did Ben take it too far confronting Bailey? I'm loving the season of Summer House. That is no secret. I've been raving about it. I think it's really good. I think it's really varied. You know, it started out being really focused on the Kyle and Amanda stuff, but I think they've done a good job at also giving us a lot of the newbies of Sierra and West and Jesse. I think there's a lot going on, and I really am encouraged by it. Again, because it's this transitional season where, like, you know, Kyle and Amanda are going out with a bang by literally breaking up. You know, we have Lindsay and Carl still in the mix, but they won't be after this season likely. So yeah, like there are definitely people in my life who, you know, say that they think it's repetitive. They don't care about the Kyle and Amanda stuff because they know where it's going, and it feels like it's stuff that we've seen in past seasons. But I don't agree with that take. I think it's really fantastic reality TV this season. And again, there's good variety, I think, in terms of the drama, and the Kyle and Amanda stuff has not been overshadowing everything as much as I kind of expected it to. And I also, again, I just think it's setting the show up and the spinoff up in the city up really nicely for the future. I don't think there are too many newbies. I think they had to take a big swing by casting, you know, 5 to 6 people, in this case, 6 people, because they needed at least, like, you know, 2 to 3 of those people to work so that, like, for season 11, they could bring back West, Jesse, Sierra, and then at least 2 to 3 newbies, because it didn't need to feel like a reboot, you know, next season. So the fact that there are so many promising people they can bring back that will be familiar faces for season 11, I'm sure they'll also add new people for season 11. But like, we have a solid, like, you know, 5 to 8 people they can already have on next season's cast, even if they lose Kyle, Amanda, Carl, Lindsay. Like, that's pretty impressive, I think. Like, I really like a lot of them. I think Levi is the one who, you know, is the biggest question mark. They've been definitely editing her down. And I think, now that I've thought about this, even though it's a little bit weird how they have done it, or very weird, I think it's weird that Levi doesn't have confessionals, but I think that Dara, maybe they didn't expect her to pop as much, to connect with KJ as much. And I think that she maybe... I think her sort of increasing airtime probably as the season goes on, my guess, that is probably why Levi is sort of being edited down. That's my totally like just sort of unfounded, like educated guess on that. And then when it comes to Ben and Bailey, I see it both ways. I think that Bailey, was it inappropriate for her to say that on Amanda's birthday at the dinner table in front of Kyle? Yes, of course. But I also wish she had stood 10 toes down on it. You know, like I wish that she had just sort of like gone out afterwards and you know, like kind of just bucked up. Do I think that Ben had a really intense, stern reaction that was pretty uncomfortable? Yeah, I also think that too. And I think a lot of that is because she hit a nerve, because it was kind of true what she said. I think that Ben would want to hook up with Amanda. I don't think that he would have done it because she was married to Kyle, but I think he was interested in that package they showed. Like, they clearly were flirting with each other, or he was clearly flirting with her. And so I think that that's part of what explains his reaction. So I see it both ways. I really do. But it definitely put like a different taste in your mouth about Ben after that whole scene, didn't it? All right. PD Ree on Instagram. Do you agree that Wes is currently the king of Bravo, not including Andy, of course? I mean, sure. I see that. I think there are plenty of people who will think that, you know, he never will deserve Sierra and he's this fuckboy and yada, yada, yada. Personally, I love West, and I think that he's one of the best casting decisions that Bravo has made in the past like 5 years. I've never met him, but he is definitely up there with some of the best right now, especially when it comes to the men. He just, and I'm so glad that after last season where he really kind of shrank away in reaction to all the Sierra drama, I'm glad that he's sort of back to being himself again, because he is a star and he is really likable, I think. And I think he's a good guy. You know, I think that he fucked it up with Sierra the first go around. But like, if she's down to give him a second chance, if she's welcoming him back into her life, then like, who are we to judge and who are we to say that he doesn't deserve her, you know? And then in terms of being the king of Bravo, I mean, first of all, I guess, what's his competition? I guess at BravoCon, it was definitely still Craig. There's no question about that, just in terms of the audience reaction and sort of how prominent he was. But also since then, this season of Southern Charm has not been too kind for him. So maybe there is sort of a passing of the guard happening. I don't know. All right, Tosin Aloho on Threads. With In the City happening, are we certain that Kyle won't come back to Summer House next season? It feels like he has to for visibility with Loverboy, but it feels as though a divorced Kyle in the Summer House may cause more harm than good. I mean, I'm not 100% certain that Kyle is not coming back to Summer House next season, but I think he probably isn't. You know, that being said, I do think there's probably opportunity for Kyle, Lindsay, Carl, Amanda, etc., to still make appearances in the Summer House, like show up for a weekend or two, like sort of like Lindsay's doing this summer, maybe to a lesser extent, because I'm sure they do want to sort of move the show along. And they have this landing spot in the city, of course. So I'm not 100% certain, but I could see him making cameos. But I would also rather I would rather follow him outside of the share house at this point. And also, in terms of visibility for Loverboy, Bravo is not making casting decisions based on whether or not it's going to be good for the Loverboy business, you know? And Loverboy at this point will always be intricately linked with Summer House. And, you know, so Kyle not being on as a full-time cast member next season, I don't think would really change that. But, you know, he also does need to show, I think, and in the city is an opportunity to do this, that he's willing to grow up a little bit. You know, I think even though him and Amanda are broken up and you'd think that maybe that gives him like a leeway to sort of fall completely back into his ways, I think Kyle would be wise to still show some more maturity and, you know, some growth and some willingness to actually still make some changes in his lifestyle. Especially now that he doesn't have the show to, one, use it as an excuse, and also two, to drive his lifestyle. You know, part of the reason why he did not give up partying is because it was still his job, regardless of the DJing. So I hope that the show doesn't have him as a full-time cast member next season, not because of him, just because I think the show should continue to evolve and he still has In the City and will still be privy to his life there. All right, regarding Alex on Instagram, ordering Ladies of London to compete with Real Housewives of London, then only doing 6 episodes shows a lack of confidence. No? So actually, when you said 6 episodes, I was like, I didn't realize it was 6 episodes. I think it's supposed to be 7. I could be wrong, but from what I can tell, it's going to be 7 episodes, which is definitely shorter than the usual 8 season first seasons of a show. First seasons are always shorter. It's technically the 4th season, but it's the first season of the reboot. And I actually don't think that there's a lack of confidence around Ladies of London. I mean, first of all, it's a great show. It's really, really solid. They did a really expensive press event last week in New York at Phuket's, which is a really, really nice hotel. I was at that event. The entire cast got flown out from London, and they had this really, like, nice tea party set up. Again, a really nice hotel, like, really nicely done event. And so to me, like, they've actually been doing good press for the show, which to me shows confidence. And then also, I'm in LA right now. There's a huge billboard on Sunset Boulevard, very prominent, featuring Ladies of London and the whole cast right outside my hotel. Like, they're definitely putting money behind this. I think that they want this to succeed. And I think that it does have the ingredients to do so. Like, I love the vintage old school Bravo feel. I love that none of the cast members seem to really need the show. They're kind of doing it for fun and, like, for shits and giggles. There's some legit casting here and some personalities that really just feel like they don't give a fuck what people think about them. Like, there's good energy around this. And I actually, even just in talking to some of the Bravo team, like, I think that they do feel confidence in Ladies of London. So I see why you would say that about 6 episodes. But first of all, I think it's supposed to be 7. And 2, I don't think that's a reflection of a lack of confidence. All right, Paul on Instagram. I don't understand the criticism of Mark Francis on Ladies of London. Luke had a recurring role in commentary on the original run. No confessionals, but he got into the mix often. I think Mark Francis is necessary. I totally agree. That's a really good shout out about Luke. He kind of gets forgotten about in that original run, but he was totally there in the mix, as Carl would say. And I think Mark is fantastic. I think that he is a great Greek chorus, a great source of humor on the Ladies of London reboot so far. He's clearly meant to be on camera. And he was on that other reality show that I've not seen. I think, was it Made in Chelsea? So he's been there. He's been around the block before. But I think he fits right in on the show. It makes sense for him to be on it. And I feel like most of the criticism that I saw about Mark on Ladies of London came before the show ever aired. And people are sort of making assumptions about him being there. So now I hope that people are sort of eating their words and realizing that, you know, him being there is not as odd or sort of unnecessary as they might have thought it was. I think that he is totally a member of this friend group, and it makes sense for him to be there. All right, Sir Lasio Sam, I don't know how to pronounce that, on Instagram. What are your thoughts on the new cast of Roni? I mean, I think they brought the correct 3 people back in Aaron, Sai, and Jessel. I had been saying that if they bring anybody back, it should be those 3. I think Carol being a friend is really important. Again, it's this really necessary tie back to the original run of the show. You have to have that if you want to say that this is the same show that the old cast was on. You know, like, that's, I used to say, like, they should have made it a season 1 again, you know, of Real Housewives of New York. So if they're going to, you know, go with season 15, then give us somebody who connects us to the past. And Carol being that person, I think, is really, for me, it's really welcome. In terms of the 3 new people, Erica Hammond, you know, she has real money. She is married to the co-founder of Built, who's a billionaire. We have Daisy Toy. She has the Martha Stewart connection, which I think is a great sort of hook. And then Haley Glassman is giving mess and problematic vibes. But the show needs the mess. It was too buttoned up before. That was one of the problems with it. And so we need genuine controversy and divisiveness. And I think that Haley's going to give that, for better or worse. And, you know, I'm not going to say that's promising, but I think that that is something that, like, is intriguing, and I'm interested to see how they all react to her and if they pull out more receipts about her. You know, like, is there more problematic stuff that she said online? Like, I'd like to see that. So, you know, I'm not making too many assumptions about this, because I'm just sort of like, all right, go film this show. Show us that you can give us a good season, and then I don't really need to hear any updates before then. You know what I mean? Like, again, that last season was not good. So show us that you are able to make a good show with this new showrunner, with a slightly new cast, and, like, let them cook, you know? That's sort of how I'm feeling about it right now. KT Bocher on Instagram, what is the latest update on The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City filming? I don't have many updates. I know they filmed for Robert Jr.'s funeral. I don't know if they filmed the actual funeral, but they definitely were filming around it. The entire cast attended it, as did production. Cynthia, Sheree, and Kyle were there. I know there's a rumored newbie on the cast, but I think it's unclear right now if she's going to be a friend or a full-time cast member. You know, I know that Bronwyn and Meredith are both at Oscars parties this weekend. There was even a picture of Meredith with Nene, which was kind of iconic, and Bronwyn was out with her boyfriend. So I'm assuming we'll get some of that stuff, or maybe we'll hear about that stuff. I don't know. I think for me, the biggest sort of question mark is like, how much is Mary going to participate? You know, I hope that she's not putting too much pressure on herself right now to participate and to film a lot. But also on the flip side, if it's a good outlet for her, if she feels like it's almost cathartic to do this or distracting to do this, more power to her. I'm really curious to see how they treat, you know, Robert Jr.'s death, which delayed filming for a week. It's definitely going to be part of the season, but I'm guessing they don't want it to sort of weigh it down too much. So I'm curious how that goes. But otherwise, I have not heard many updates about filming, which I think is a good thing. I like when I don't hear that much. Marilyn Knits on Threads, could you give an update on where they are at with the production of The Real Housewives of Miami? I love the show, but with the long breaks in production, it seems to have difficulty keeping the more casual Bravo watchers' interest, and the ratings have suffered. I mean, it's extremely unclear what's happening with Miami, just like last season. Remember last season, they took like a 6-month break between shooting, which was definitely prolonged, and ultimately it amounted to not much change other than adding Stephanie and losing Nicole. You know, Andy made some comments on his radio show recently that were kind of cryptic about sort of the status of the show. But I, you know, after I saw this question, I did a little digging to see if I missed anything. And RHOM.Bravo on Instagram did post recently, and they said, after weeks of uncertainty, I'm now hearing that RHOM has officially been picked up, and Andy Cohen confirmed last week that Miami will be moving forward alongside Roni after what was previously shaping up to be an either-or situation between the two franchises. However, from what sources are saying, there is expected to be a major shakeup, with nearly half the cast potentially going gone heading into the new season. Nothing's ever final in the Bravo universe, but if this plays out, season 8 could look very different. So I don't know. Take that with a grain of salt. I don't know what this account's sources are. It definitely feels like there's something up with Real Housewives of Miami. And I feel like every season there feels like there's something to sort of like be sort of side-eyeing. But Page Six also ran that article recently where they said that multiple sources tell us that Gertie and Julia are out from Miami. There also may be a third cast member that would take fans by surprise. They said that there's a chance that Stephanie could quit the show before her second season. And then also the article says that some informants note that Todd's $10 million defamation lawsuit against Bravo has left production stumped on how to proceed with his on-again, off-again ex-wife, Alexia Nebola, who is a fan favorite. But as one of our sources point out, not only did Todd file to dismiss the lawsuit in December, but showrunners have worked around this issue in the past and would do it again. According to our insiders, our execs are also taking into account how things went for the Real Housewives of Miami cast at BravoCon 2025. Their panel was far from the most entertaining or seamless of the weekend, which we're told did not inspire producers to rush to pick cameras back up. According to one informant, there have been conversations about getting the ball rolling next month, but dates have not been locked in and contracts have not been sent out. So if the panel was actually an indicator for them, that would, to me, spell also trouble for Adriana, because she pulled that whole stunt with, like, you know, revealing who the Haitian mortician was, and it was going to be Phaedra. Like, there was the whole weird thing, right? It was like chaos. I posted some video of from the audience of it. I would be shocked if Alexia went out. And Stephanie still definitely hangs out with the cast. And I just saw Larsa post a picture with her the other day. So again, I'll take it with a grain of salt. But there definitely feels like there's something in the air. And I would not be shocked if Julia and Gertie were cut. Because that was also part of the panel. It was just sort of like Gertie's being a little bit of a stick in the mud and just like not swaying at all. And Julia just like does not seem very popular with the audience. And somebody whose username I accidentally cropped out when I took a screenshot of their question, they had asked for my thoughts on the delay and the rumors that Gertie and Julia are out. And they also asked if I have had updates on Jersey. And I have not personally heard any recent updates. I guess there's a rumor that like Margaret Joseph is going to be on some like Real Housewives Ultimate Girls ripoff show on Amazon that has like Kenya and a bunch of other like random reality stars. It's giving mess. It's giving a little bit chaotic, but TBD on if it's actually happening. And then in terms of Jersey, the rumors currently are that Teresa, Melissa, and Dolores are coming back. And then there's newbies named Gia Casey, Amber Sabathia, and Natalia Ruffalo. That's like the most sort of a concrete rumor that I feel like we've heard about the show in quite some time, which to me seems like maybe it's somewhere close to the truth and somewhere close to the reality of what's going to happen. To me, it's like justice for Marge. I think that Marge was really integral in getting Jersey back on its feet, sort of around that Sticky Flicker time. You know, after Margaret joined, then we got the Jackie and Jennifer additions, and then the show was really on a roll for several seasons there for a while. And I think Margaret was a big part of that. And so for her to get cut out, I think would be really unfortunate. And I think that Teresa and Melissa making up is probably a big factor in that. I think that, you know, Margaret and Teresa, I mean, I get Margaret and Louie more, like they really can't coexist. And Margaret is definitely more sort of, I think, aggressively anti them. And so I think that actually them making up was bad for her future on the show. I don't know if this is actually true, but these are the rumors right now. All right. Tosin Aloho on Threads also asked, Amanda can be annoying, but it feels like the issue with Amanda is more that she's a millennial housewife, almost like it was with Crystal in Beverly Hills. But we also saw a cast of predominantly millennials on Roni flop hard. They all can't stay on the show forever. Do the housewives have a millennial problem, and what can be done to fix it? So it sounds like Tosin read Lewis Staples, a friend of the pod. He wrote a piece for Betches about this, how Housewives has a millennial problem. And I see the argument and I don't fully disagree with it, but I also don't necessarily fully agree. To me, like Roni did not work because it was a cast full of millennials. It didn't work because of a variety of other different reasons. I think Crystal wasn't a bad housewife. I think that she like worked in a lot of ways, but I think her biggest sort of thing was that she just didn't jive with the rest of her cast. And definitely age and generation contributed to that for sure. But I don't think that was like the full reason why, you know, she happened to be a millennial and she had some millennial qualities for sure. I don't think that her being a millennial explains why she didn't, quote unquote, didn't work on the show. I mean, and then Amanda to me is just sort of representative of like really extreme qualities that millennials get tagged with. But again, she's not like a typical millennial in my eyes. Like, I think that, again, it's like, yes, like some of her annoying qualities are definitely ones that get pegged to millennials. But again, I think that she's like a really specific example. So I don't know if it's a millennial problem across housewives. Because also, as Lewis mentioned in his piece, like Candace, Ashley, Whitney Rose, those are all millennial housewives who are fantastic and have been fantastic at their jobs for seasons. So I don't think Real Housewives has a millennial problem, actually. I see the argument, but I don't necessarily agree with that. You know, I do think that there is definitely like on some franchises, a hurdle to address is like, how do you connect sort of maybe some of the older generation housewives with new additions who are, you know, in their 30s? Sometimes that connection isn't fully there, but I think it's doable. You know, I think Miami has a cast that's like a pretty wide range in ages. Beverly Hills at this point is for sure. And I mean, their cast is not perfect, but, you know, I think some of these franchises do have a wide range in ages, but it works. I mean, Potomac, same thing. So I actually don't fully agree with that thesis. And third question from Tosin on Threads. With Austin, Shep, and Craig getting older, and Craig saying in the trailer he might not come back for next season, do we think that the show would actually begin to focus more on the women? It has been about the guys for a really long time, especially post-Catherine and Thomas. Totally agree. It's definitely been more about the men. You know, I've said ad nauseum that like I wish that the show would not cycle through the women so often. Once they become, you know, no longer romantic prospects for the men. But I'd love to see this shift, or at least like a little bit more of a rebalancing for that to be a little bit less stark. But I also don't think it will ever fully shift to be about women, because I feel like this, you know, it being about the Southern Gentleman, the original title of Southern Charm, that's baked into the DNA of this show. And I actually think on Bravo, which is, you know, very heavily female skewing in terms of audience, but also, of course, in terms of the cast members on their shows, to have a show that is more from the male perspective, I think actually differentiates it on Bravo a little bit. And I think at a certain point, I guess this season, I was just sort of like, all right, I guess I just have to like accept Southern Charm for what it is, which is a show about the men, ultimately. I guess the change that I would like to see is just for them to hold on to the women for longer and to find more roles for them instead of, you know, discarding them after they've kind of hooked up with the guy and then broken up. And then it's like, all right, what do we do with them? Oh, let's find a new one. No, like, let's hold on to some of these great female cast members and see more of their lives beyond sort of just being romantic prospects for Shep, Austin, and Craig. All right, Phil Burke on Instagram. Do you find it hard to trust anything Sally says on Southern Charm? She's great TV and good for the show, but I find her so hard to like or trust because she is so hypocritical. She thought Craig was amazing until he didn't show interest, and then he became a terrible guy who let her on. She says we don't know the real Whitner, but she doesn't seem to be a reliable narrator. Are we sure that the Wit is a bad guy? It's possible, but no evidence yet to prove that. Or is it that Sally didn't get attention from him, so now he's automatically bad or sinister? She gets mad at Charlie for hanging with Craig, but so obviously did the same thing to Vanita and didn't care. Again, great casting, but I think her hypocrisy needs to be called out too. You know, I mean, I think some of that's very well said. I don't agree with all of it. I do think that like the change up from Craig to Austin is definitely like notable, as well as like her different treatment of Charlie and Vanita and sort of the flipping of positions in those two dynamics for sure. The Whitner piece is the one that I don't agree with. I agree that her implication that he's a bad guy has not been explained or answered for. So that's kind of been sticking in my head too. Like, I don't really know what she meant by that. And I don't think we've seen anything that indicates that's true since then from Whitner. Like, he seems like a pretty good guy to me. But I don't think that she said that because she didn't get romantic attention from him. I don't think there's no indication that Sally was ever interested in Whitner in that way. So if she was getting at something, I don't think it was because of that. But again, I think that Sally is a really good addition to the show. I do see what you're saying in terms of some of the hypocrisy. But again, reality stars who are a little hypocritical and aren't perfect and make you think two ways about them, those are some of the best ones. So, you know, and maybe it's also a reflection of like, again, like as I mentioned with the last question, like the women are really sort of implied that they have to have a romantic partner on the cast to stick around. And, you know, I think part of that was her wanting to solidify her job on the show, which she's good at. And so I think maybe with like a solidified second season on the show where she feels a little bit less of that pressure, maybe she'd be freed up from trying less hard in that regard. All right, Ben Dieterly on Instagram. In the early 2010s, Bravo was built on aspiration. We wanted to be them. Today, it's built on scandal. We want to see them fall. Has the Bravoverse shifted from a lifestyle brand to a modern-day Roman Coliseum? If the audience no longer likes or envies the cast, but only tunes in to see the litigation and liquidation phases of their lives, does the show have a shelf life, or are we just waiting for the last person to get served papers? Really fascinating question. And I actually feel like this perhaps deserves like a more fleshed out episode of its own, or at least like a bigger discussion with somebody else. So I'm going to hang on to this one. It's hard to answer on my own in just a few minutes. But I do agree that Scandal has changed everything and what viewers, and especially in terms of what viewers want and expect from the shows. I think Reality Von T's also changed a lot. You know, it is all about the fall from grace and things not being the way they're presented to us and not trusting that information. It's about investigation and sort of the dynamics between fan pages and bloggers and the actual cast members and social media. You know, there's mystery and there's crime. Like, the stakes have no doubt gotten higher, which is why when we get seasons that are solid without those things, it hits even harder and better. There's been a couple of Miami seasons like that. I think Potomac, Atlanta, Beverly Hills in particular, I think on the flip side has sort of painted itself into a corner because like we got the Erica thing, we got Lucy Apple Juicy, we got Denise Richards and Brandy. We got so many of these big seasons of like really big topics that define full seasons of the show. And now they're sort of without that. And the show doesn't really know what to do without, you know, a big topic like that. I think they're kind of trying to replicate that too, like via like Kyle and Dorit or Kyle and Mauricio or Dorit and PK. And it just doesn't hit as much. So I agree with this. And I will try to do a longer segment at least, or discussion with a guest at some point about this. I think it's really interesting, really interesting question. So thanks, Ben, for this good idea. For Donna Joyce, how do we get LVP, Miss Pat, and Whitney off our screens? It feels inauthentic. I mean, I think LVP will always be on reality TV and always somehow be on Bravo, probably. I mean, she's a big draw. There are a lot of people who really love her. She's iconic. And the reboot of Vanderpump Rules did get a second season, so she's not going anywhere anytime soon. She also has her, like, Hulu shows, which I don't really take part in. Miss Pat, I like Pat. I don't like some of her backwards views on the dynamics between women and men. Some of those are very antiquated, but I'm down to still have her be a mascot of Southern Charm. Like, it doesn't bother me. I like the men's dinner she has every year. Like, I love her house. I love being able to go there on the show. So I don't have a problem with this Pat being there. Whitney, on the other hand, I could totally do without. I mean, I think the fact that he's a producer and a cast member is just always going to be sort of this weird conflict of interest. He's hooked up with several of the younger women on the show, which I think is you know, gives you pause a little bit. And I don't think he adds that much as a cast member. I really don't. I find his presence to be fairly creepy and weird sometimes. And so I just, he's the one that I would agree. Like, let's, we don't need him. LVP, I don't need her around. I just don't foresee that being anything that happens anytime soon either. All right, last several questions. CL Dinsdale on Twitter. What about scenes we see in previews that are not shown on the show? It seems we are getting so many flashbacks to scenes, thinking of SLC, Beverly Hills. I mean, this is the question that I like, is my Roman Empire. I have never gotten a straight answer to this. Why we see so many things in trailers and teasers that don't end up actually on the show. And sometimes they feel like really consequential scenes and good quotes and things that could really, like, you know, drive stuff that for them to be cut out makes you think, right? And it does feel like it's happening more and more often these days too, which is also weird because, like, you know, it is a reflection of the fact that an episode's final cut had not been locked before, you know, a trailer's been cut or a teaser's been cut. But fans are as eagle-eyed as they've ever been now. So, like, you'd think that Bravo and production companies would want to be tampering down on this trend instead of letting it happen more often. So I'm kind of shocked how much it happens, honestly, because people are going to notice that. And in terms of flashback scenes specifically, I think it's really interesting that we do see those a lot. And I agree that they feel like they've been happening pretty frequently. But to me, I think the implication there is usually that, like, yeah, maybe this one notable thing was said at this particular lunch or dinner or whatever it is, but, like, the rest of the scene was probably pretty inconsequential and boring and, like, not notable. So, like, it didn't make sense for production to, you know, eat up 5 minutes of an episode with the full scene. And so it makes sense to do flashback of it. But I agree, we are getting those more often. But those don't fully bother me. But sometimes I'm like, huh, it would have been nice to see that sort of, you know, in context fully and in a scene. But the footage in the trailers that don't get shown in the episode, that is inexcusable to me. CL Dinsdale on Twitter also asked, how can we fix reunions? I understand the need for time to edit, but it seems they film so far in advance, nothing can truly be resolved. Viewers have questions that never seem to be answered, and I'm thinking specifically about cast trips. I mean, I guess, tell me this, but are they filming reunions much earlier than they used to? Is this a new trend that you're noticing? And, you know, there are definitely reunions that have not offered enough resolution and haven't closed the loop enough, for sure. I totally agree with that. But I don't think that reunions are broken per se. I think maybe certain franchises do them better than others these days, but I don't think they're broken. So yeah, I'm just curious if this is a newer thing that you're noticing. So maybe write in and explain that a little bit more, because I don't think the reunions are broken by any means. I do think that, like, the Potomac reunion, as I discussed in my end of season deep dive of that, like, there was too much to address. And so I think that was sort of the problem there. And I think with Salt Lake City, they've never been that great at reunions because the seasons are so packed full of drama and things. So I'm curious if there's one recently that, or there's several other ones recently that you feel like didn't offer enough resolution. All right, last question from Katrina Papaleo on Instagram. How do so many Bravo podcasts thrive when recapping the same content? That's a great question. I think there's a couple things here. I think one, it's a reflection of Bravo fans in particular being pretty insatiable in terms of information and commentary. And that something also about Bravo is, like, the community aspect of it. And, like, I know that for me, on certain podcasts that I listen to, I like to hear sort of my thoughts confirmed or also challenged. But there's sort of, like, people love to talk about Bravo with their friend. And I think that for a lot of people, myself included, the podcasts that we listen to almost feel like friends. They're people that we spend time with every single week. They're in our ears multiple times a week, usually. And, you know, I think that Bravo is just, like, something that we love to always, we're always down to talk about that as Bravo fans. So I think that's part of it. And I also think that podcast listeners more generally pretty much have no limit in terms of the amount of shows they'll listen to. You know, if I hear about a new podcast or a podcast that existed that I think I'll like, I'll add it to my library. I might not listen to it every single week, but it's there and I'll probably tap into it sometimes. And I have a lot of shows in my library, my podcast library. So I think that's also part of it. But I also think that a lot of the Bravo podcasts are different. There is differentiation in how different hosts and personalities break down the shows and how they present their opinions. And, like, for example, Gabbing with Gib, my podcast is not a recap show. I'll sometimes do recap episodes, but generally speaking, I don't recap every single week. And so that's something that I think sets me apart, because also when I sort of entered the game, there were already so many people who had been recapping for years before I started doing this, and they do it amazingly well, and they have carved out, you know, big audiences for themselves. So I didn't feel like the need to sort of add to that. But again, I sort of going back to the first part, I think that podcast listeners get really attached to personalities and podcast hosts and the ways that people talk about the shows. And there's just like this, there is a parasocial relationship that gets formed. And so I think if the personality stands out enough and the person is, you know, beloved enough, there's always going to be space for them. And I think there's space for everyone who wants to do this. You know, there are so many Broadway podcasts, you're right, and not everybody listens to all of them. I think people find the people that they enjoy and that they like their delivery. And, you know, I so many of these people are my friends. And I think that I love how different everybody is and how they present their takes and their opinions and their recaps. So, yeah, that's sort of why I think there's able to be so many of these shows, because there are a lot. And so many of them are great. All right, you guys, that is it for today's Listener Mailbag episode. I appreciate you enduring my raspier voice and maybe some background noise, actually. I hope that there wasn't too much background noise in this episode because I'm recording in a phone booth. But I appreciate everyone for submitting questions. I'll be back with at least one more episode this week with a really exciting other Bravo podcaster, speaking of. And yeah, have a great rest of your week.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gib Sonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, and keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.